This is WGRE 91.5 FM, Greencastle, Indiana.
Good evening and welcome to Music for Life, music from DePauw. This week, Matt Skiba chats with members of the Horn Ensemble and Trombone Choir about their upcoming concert. We talk to flute professor Ann Reynolds about a special evening of woodwind music. Veronica Pedrell and student Andre Williams chat about a special dance and electronic music program they're presenting. We hear what several students are planning for their upcoming solo recitals, and as part of our 21st Century Musician Initiative, we bring back to campus a panel of distinguished alumni who join me to talk about life in music after DePauw. There are lots of exciting things going on in the DePauw School of Music, and we're glad you could join us for Music for Life. On Tuesday, April 22nd at 7:30 p.m. in Thompson Recital Hall, our Woodwind Galore concert. And here to chat with me about it is Ann Reynolds, our flute professor. Welcome back to the studio, Ann.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
So you've got the flute choir and clarinet ensemble, all kinds of stuff happening, but you're running the flute part. So tell me about that.
The flute part is going to be two quartets and then an extravaganza, which is all the flute players in the group. They're playing C flutes, regular flutes, but one contrabass flute, which DePauw University is fortunate to have a contrabass flute. And if you've never seen one, you should come because it's enormous.
That is the coolest instrument. If I were a kid getting to choose an instrument to start over again, I would want to start in third grade with a contrabass flute.
You wouldn't be able to carry it in third grade.
That's true. It's about the size of a third grader now that I think about it.
Exactly.
Yes, it is.
You got it.
So what are you playing?
Well, let me see. Simple Gifts and a French quartet. And then the piece with contrabass flute is called Persian Silk. And so it should make you think of belly dancers and that kind of stuff.
So is this actually written for a flute?
Yeah, it was written for a flute ensemble. There's a lot of music for flute ensembles now because there's a lot of flute ensembles.
Mm-hmm.
There's not only a contrabass flute, but if you want to spend $20,000, there's a sub-contrabass flute.
There's a sub. I didn't even know that.
Yeah. So it's down in low tuba range.
Wow.
And it stands on the floor, and it's enormous, and it takes a huge amount of air.
So for our listeners who aren't familiar with anything other than piccolo and flute, there are actually several other versions. So the piccolo, of course, is the smallest of them.
And then the C flute, and then the alto flute, which is bigger, and you've probably heard it on the Pink Panther, and then bass flute, and then contrabass flute, and then sub-contrabass flute.
Wow. And so is the sub-contrabass flute relatively new?
Well, I'd say the last 15, 20 years. There's a maker in Germany who makes extraordinary large instruments. And, well, there's actually a Swiss soloist who plays contrabass flute all over the place.
It's got to be hard to get on an airplane.
I think he probably has to put it below.
Yeah, that's a shame.
Yeah.
So the fingerings are the same.
Yes.
But is the embouchure when you're... Is it different playing an alto flute to a piccolo flute, and then you get onto those bass flutes?
It gets bigger and bigger as you go down.
But the
principle basically
is the same.
Yeah. There's side panels on the contrabass flute to help you direct the air. It's very weird looking. So
alto flute looks like a flute. But once you get past that, they start really becoming rather unusual. And I remember the first time I saw the DePauw group playing it, Josh Levin was playing it, and it was almost as big as he was.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's now playing contrabass flute, and he's really learned to wrangle with it, because when he started, he said, oh, I'll never be able to play that, and now he's doing it.
Yeah, because I'm a recovering trumpet player myself, and there's some resistance when you're playing a trumpet, but when you're playing a flute, there's no resistance at all, and now you're playing a contrabass flute, there's none.
Well, you make your own.
Yeah,
it's like a singer.
Yeah. Yeah. And so also sharing the stage with you that night.
It's the clarinet ensemble, which I understand from Randy Salmon, the director, has a very cool klezmer piece, so that should be fun.
Very cool.
And then a woodwind quintet, which is playing a piece by Malcolm Arnold, and his stuff is funny.
I love Malcolm Arnold.
Great composer. And then the last is a saxophone quartet, and they have three pieces, and I tried to get in touch with Scotty, but I didn't, so I don't know anything about it.
So this is a woodwind extravaganza, as it were. And I think it's interesting because, for me as a conductor, the flute family, you know, carries the top sound. And then you work your way through the woodwinds and you get to some really low sounds once you get down to the bassoon. But you guys here, because we have all these cool toys, can actually bring the range of the flute family from top to bottom.
I'm really happy about that, because if you hear a flute choir with only flutes, it sounds like a swarm of bees.
And a little goes a long way.
Yes, exactly.
Right. So by giving those bass voices really adds so much. And of course, the alto flute's a really beautiful sound. You've heard it before, whether you know it or not, because it's such a beautiful sound, and composers favor it for movie soundtracks and the like.
Yes.
You've heard alto flute, but you got to come hear these instruments. This is going to be a great night, and it's right around the corner.
April 22nd
at 7:30 p.m. in Thompson Recital Hall. And thanks for coming in to chat about it.
You're welcome.
Hi, this is Anna Gadula. Joining me in the studio is senior Annalise Del Cambre to talk about her recital. Hi, Annalise.
Hi, Anna.
So when is your recital?
My recital is Sunday, April 27th at 5 p.m.
In Thompson Recital Hall?
Yes.
Okay. And what are you performing?
I am performing a really interesting, diverse mix of repertoire.
Mm-hmm.
I'm beginning with a very early Handel aria. Okay. And I am ending with my jazz quartet
playing a
jazz set. So that's going to be really exciting, because I don't think that's really been done on a...
We'll traverse the whole Western canon of music.
Exactly. Exactly. Yes.
That's awesome. Cool. And how was the preparation for this recital?
It's a good experience to prepare for a recital as a performer.
Mm-hmm.
It's difficult and it can be really stressful.
Mm-hmm.
But if you kind of think of these recitals as the equivalent to a written thesis,
mm-hmm.
I think that, you know,
the amount of time and effort you put into it.
Exactly. There's so much behind the scenes research that goes into preparing a recital.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
It's a good experience, but very intense.
Yeah. How long have you been preparing for this recital?
I started preparing last spring, a year ago.
Oh, wow. So it's a whole year for a culmination of 1 hour of Annalise.
That's right. That's it.
That's awesome. Are you excited?
I'm very excited.
Good.
Yes.
What are you most excited about performing? And so what should the audience be excited about hearing?
I'm really excited to show how versatile I am as a performer and being able to demonstrate all these different genres.
Because you sing jazz here with the jazz ensemble.
Yes, and in the jazz quartet.
Right. Mm-hmm. But you also
sing classical
music. Very operatic. You were the lead in the opera.
Yes.
So you're all over the board.
Yes,
so
I am.
Versatile.
Yeah, 21CM represent. And I'm really excited. I think there's a great contrast between my Puccini, I'm doing the two Mimi arias from La Boheme.
Oh, so beautiful. So beautiful.
Versus the jazz. It's like a totally different voice, but I love being able to show that to the audience.
That's awesome. And I'll be there and I'm sure I'll be very excited for you. All right. So remind the audience again when your recital is.
April 27th at 5 p.m. Reception to follow.
Ooh, excellent. I'll definitely be there then. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
From the Student Recital Hour of Wednesday, April 9th, 2014, clarinetist Dan Hickey, violinist Jenny Miller, and pianist Rachel Robin perform the Capriccio Allegro movement from the Trio for Clarinet, Violin, and Piano by Giancarlo Menotti. Thank you.
My name is Matt Skiba. With me today, I have Christian Thomas.
Hi.
And Mo Bailey.
Hello.
To discuss the upcoming trombone and French horn concert that is on April 21st, starting at 7:30. So thanks, guys, for coming in.
Of course.
Welcome.
Christian, we'll go ahead and start with the trombone choir. What kind of things can we expect in the concert coming up? Are you playing old pieces, new pieces?
Well, there's really a mixture of both. That's one of the really good things about this trombone studio. I mean, I'm just a freshman, but I've noticed that in my year here that we play a lot of old music and new music. It's really nice.
And Mo, what about the French horns?
We're playing definitely some old stuff, Mendelssohn, Brahms, but then some newer stuff like Wilder, who's kind of 21st century, I suppose you could say. And we actually have two pieces that two kids in our studio arranged. So A Boy and a Girl is by Eric Whitaker. So that's pretty exciting. It'll be really fun.
Yeah, that should be awesome. So are the French horns still doing their normal setup where it's a larger ensemble and then splitting down?
Yeah, we tend to do that just so more advanced students can play a more advanced piece in a quartet setting. And usually freshmen will play an easier set.
Okay.
That.
Christian, do the trombones usually stay in one ensemble?
We normally stay in one ensemble, at least we did for the first concert. But for this concert, we're splitting into two. Well, one's a quintet, one's a quartet, because we have nine players. We're doing that for the second half of the concert. At least that's what I've been led to believe that we're doing.
Okay, and what would you both describe as your favorite piece for this concert?
Oh, Mo, do you want to go first?
Sure. I really like the Alec Wilder piece we're playing. It's my quartet, so it's mostly upperclassmen. And it's called 6x4 because it's a quartet and there's six movements. And I jokingly suggested we play two of them and call it a 2x4, but that was rejected. So we are playing four movements. So it'll be 4x4. And it's really cool. It's very modern, kind of 21st century, very much in line with what we're doing here.
Cool. Christian, what about you?
My favorite piece that we're playing would definitely be the quartet that I'm in. It's a piece called Trois Chansons by Debussy. And I really like it because, I don't know, I've just always liked pieces in this style. I'm not really sure what style you'd call it.
Probably French Impressionism.
Yes, you're probably right.
I think Mo is taking music history.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
One more little thing to note about what's really cool about our two ensembles is the fact that we both actually work with musicians in the ISO. Can you guys talk a little bit about what it's like to take lessons with them?
Well, the trombone professor here is Jim Beckel. He is phenomenal. It's really nice having someone who's actually out there being a professional orchestral musician, because he just knows everything that you will need to know for your career.
Well, what about you?
Danforth is easily the best French horn player I've ever heard in live. And we get to go see a lot of his concerts, which is really exciting because you get to see firsthand what it looks like to be a professional orchestral musician. But it certainly makes you feel bad about your playing when you hear them play.
Oh, yeah.
And I think I learn a lot more when Danforth just gets out his horn and plays than sometimes when he speaks, even just because it's so amazing.
Yeah. And working with the two of them definitely always gives us something more to strive for.
Absolutely.
So thank you both for coming in. It's great to see both of you again. And again, anytime. Our concert is on April 21st at 7:30 in Thompson Recital Hall. Hope to see you there.
Hi, I'm Joe Flummerfelt, and you're listening to Music for Life.
Veronica Pedrell and Andre Williams are here to chat with me about an exciting new thing happening here in the Green Center for the Performing Arts on April 24th. Welcome.
Hi. It's great to be here.
So, Andre, the student, the dance end of this story, and Veronica, the faculty, the music end of this story, you're going to have to fill us in. What's going on?
Okay, so around 2011, my senior year of high school, there was a group that performed. What show was it? It was called Abandonment to Impulse by Onyx Wintergard. Mm-hmm. And they used a piece by Charles Bukowski called Bluebird. And I kind of put that in my back pocket for a while. I was like, I could do something with that later.
That's a piece of poetry, right?
Correct. So I'm doing this whole project now, and it came to me with this whole dance thing that I'm trying to put back on campus with Excel that we should do this for a production. So we came up with the idea. I teamed up with Shannon Crosby, as well as a few other students, Frankie Abraham and Emma Walker, to put together this whole idea of this alternate world that kind of represents our world. It talks about the idea of not being able to be yourself in society, and then taking that through a storyline and presenting that through a dance production.
So we took the poetry of Bluebird.
Yes.
And then you can't dance to poetry. Well, actually you can, but music typically helps. And so that's what brought you to Veronica?
Mm-hmm. Correct.
How'd this bring you into the loop?
Well, last year, Andre asked me to put together a couple of pieces for another dance production that his group had done. And then after that, we started putting our brains together about what we might do this year and got started a little bit earlier. And we talked about doing it as a programmatic themed production rather than a more abstract collection of pieces. Mm. So the music tells a story as well as the dance telling the story as it progresses. Mm. So for me, I was inspired by the story and it gave way to a number of different genres that you'll hear in the production. As a performer and as a composer, I put my feet into many different kinds of ponds. Mm-hmm. So there are going to be some pieces which sort of straddle my experimental side, where there's microtonal variances within orchestral sounding instruments.
Oh, wow.
But there's also a hip-hop kind of piece that is influenced by the old Lindy Hop of the 40s. So yeah, it ranges on a big spectrum there.
Do you call on the Lindy Hop in your choreography?
Yes, actually, there's a new style that people are grasping onto called dance fusion, where you take multiple different styles and just kind of crash course them into one huge thing, and that's what we're trying to do. So while you'll see swing and ballet and contemporary, you'll also see hip-hop, postmodern, and all types of styles within one huge piece.
Hmm. So what are the forces required to pull this off, both musical and dancers?
Well, from a musical perspective, almost everything is coming out of my computer, mm-hmm, from my workstation. Andre, you want to speak about...
We've been putting together a large production team to make sure that there's multiple different takes and ideas on this story. Mm-hmm. So we have people, choreographers specifically from Chicago, from Texas, that I've worked with over the past few years that are also giving input and also giving choreography. And then we also have people who are doing marketing and other things. So really the baseline of the story came from me. However, you're getting a multitude of different takes on what exactly we're trying to do.
Very cool. And so this production runs for multiple evenings?
Yes, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday evening at 7:30.
And it's in Moore?
In Moore, April 24th through 26th.
Great. Thanks for coming in to chat about it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Love you, babe. A little bird told me we'd be happy. Ensemble.
I'm Eric.
I'm Melissa.
I'm Jenny.
I'm Drew.
And you're listening to
Music for Life.
Hello, it's student producer Katie Sherman. With me in the studio is senior trumpet performance major Maggie Eppelheimer. Thanks for joining me.
Yeah, sure. Hey, Katie.
So first off, when is your recital?
It's April 26th of the Saturday at 7:30 p.m. in Thompson Recital Hall.
What can we expect to hear you play?
Well, so far what I have planned are three different trumpet concertos on three different instruments, so that's a lot of fun. And then it's originally a duet for bassoon and trumpet written by Hindemith with strings, but it'll be with piano instead. And the program will be closed with a quintet piece that we played at our brass quintet recital earlier in the semester.
So what are the three instruments? Just three different types of trumpets?
Yeah, basically. It's a total of four, but for one of the pieces I'm playing two, it's the first one's a piccolo trumpet, so a little bit higher, usually played for Baroque style type pieces. And then the normal like B-flat trumpet and C trumpet, and those are for the bigger concertos. And then a flugelhorn, which has a more mellow sound, usually common in jazz pieces.
Cool. So why did you choose these pieces?
Well, one of them I actually heard, I was studying another trumpet concerto that was performed by a trumpet major who graduated last year, Travis Miller, and I really liked the piece. And so I started looking up online and I found this other really cool kind of more jazz, less classical concerto. It's more modern.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's really cool. I really like it. So I decided to try to incorporate that into my recital. And as far as the bassoon and trumpet concerto goes, Lenny actually suggested it to me because Kara and Lenny played it together.
That's Lenny Foy and Kara Stoli, our trumpet and bassoon professors.
Yeah.
So what are you most excited for?
I'm really excited for specifically the group pieces, such as the duet and the quintet piece. We played the quintet piece before, but I always really enjoy playing with more talented musicians, especially in a chamber ensemble setting. And Gwen Eberts, who is a double degree performance major in bassoon, she's also very talented. I'm really excited to work with her as well.
Great. So is there anything else you'd like the audience to know?
I guess I can make a plug for another recital. My good friend Alicia Petroni has her senior recital on Sunday at 3, and she'll be playing wonderful harp music. So if you come out to mine, you should also come out to hers.
Great. Well, I can't wait for both of your recitals. Thank you so much for coming today.
Of course.
From the student recital hour of Wednesday, April 16th, 2014, pianist Megan Kessler performs the Prelude No. 4, Opus 23, by Sergei Rachmaninoff.
Thank you.
Hi, this is Anna Gatdula, and here today with me in the studio is Laura Neal.
Hello.
And she's here to talk about her upcoming senior recital. So Laura, when is your recital?
My senior recital is April 26th, which is a Saturday at 5:30 in Thompson.
Okay, excellent. What are you performing on this recital?
I'm performing a very wide range of music, which I'm really excited about. Mm-hmm. I'm starting with Bach's Agnus Dei, which is absolutely gorgeous. Mm-hmm. And then actually ending with something that is completely 21st century, Libby Larson, called Love After 1950s, which she herself has called the modern woman's Frauenliebe und Leben, which is fantastic. And I just love the poetry so much.
Are you maybe contrasting that with Frauenliebe und Leben?
I am not. Okay. I that would have been a good idea, but I just decided to stay away from that, doing kind of like mezzo rep, which is not done very often, because it's such a good idea to explore new rep. And I'm doing actually a Grieg set, which apparently no one's heard of, but it's very near and dear to my heart.
Excellent. What is the Grieg set called?
It's Opus 48.
Okay.
So it's just Grieg setting a bunch of different German poetry, which is absolutely stunning.
Wow, that's awesome. How was the preparation for this recital?
It was intense.
Yeah.
It was a little terrifying. It's many nights looking at tons of translations and memorizing, starting really early, making sure that all the texts were really internalized. I didn't have to worry about it upcoming to my jury.
Right. No. When is your jury?
My jury is next Tuesday.
So it's
just a little terrifying, but it's going to be all good. Got my final run through this Thursday, and I'm excited to get it all out there.
Excellent. So what are you most excited about performing, and what should the audience expect to be excited about?
I'm most excited about my last two sets, which is the Grieg and the Libby Larson.
Oh, okay.
The Libby Larson, the poetry is so fun.
What do you mean by fun?
So the first two songs are called Boys' Lips and Blonde Men. Yes, it's super fun. The whole it's very, very jazzy, which they haven't really done before. Mm-hmm. And so the whole theme of, for example, for Boys' Lips is humming.
Oh, okay.
And with a very, very jazzy theme. And it's just a boy's lips are as soft as baby's skin. And so it's just it's very fun to act through all that kind of stuff. I love it. Excellent. It's great. Yeah.
That's awesome. Okay, so remind our audience again when your recital is.
My senior recital is Saturday, April 26th at 5:30 p.m. I hope to see you all there.
Thanks, Laura.
Thank you.
This is such an exciting weekend for us here at DePauw, as we have prospective students coming to campus to spend the day for a prospective student open house. We also have Chanticleer coming to the stage tonight at 8 p.m., and part of today is a return to DePauw, where we have brought back several alumni to catch up on all of the great things that are going on. And we also are having a roundtable discussion with several returning alumni who have led very interesting careers after leaving DePauw. And for the first time, we are doing this then in front of a live studio audience. The applause light just came on. Ordinarily, we do this in Studio B in the Green Center for the Performing Arts, and it's just the guests, but we have some audience members here today. We also have four panelists to chat with us. Nancy Ford Charles, who graduated in 1957. Welcome.
Thank you.
Noel Hayashi from 1968.
Thank you.
Janice Hay from 1991.
Thank you.
And Alicia Bernash from 93. Welcome back.
Thank you.
So it's wonderful to have all of you here, and you've led such amazing careers since you've left us, and you'll be sharing that with our students, but we thought it'd be great to have you share it with our radio audience as well. So Nancy, let's start with you. Now, you actually wrote your first musical here at DePauw, correct?
Two musicals here at DePauw, sophomore and senior year.
Wow.
Yes, actually, Gretchen's, my first musical, was presented here in the spring of 55, so that was 59 years ago.
Wow. And if you're thinking, that name is familiar to me, that is correct, because these are the fine ladies who wrote I'm Getting My Act Together and Taking It on the Road, which was just back in New York again this summer.
Yes, it was, yeah.
So you got your start here at DePauw as a team.
Absolutely. I mean, we wouldn't have met maybe if it hadn't been for... It was called the Monon Review, and it was a completely student-written musical. And each year, two or three different teams would get together and write a whole show, completely on spec, of course. I mean, not that there was any pay eventually either. But they'd write the show and audition it for a board. The show happened to be sponsored by the Association of Women Students Board. I don't quite know why the Association of Women Students decided to do this. But Gretchen and I and a young man named David Murnitz, I was saying David wanted to date Gretchen, but he was too shy to ask her out.
So instead he wrote
a musical with her to write a book of a musical with him. They came to me to do the music, and at that time I was also doing lyrics, so we did. And that's how Gretchen and I got started. Then David went off to be a lawyer, and Gretchen and I kept going.
Well, there you go. That's fantastic, and we're glad to have you back. We have some budding musical theater composers here that are dying to meet you and to chat with you today after our roundtable, so we're looking forward to that. Now, Noel, you graduated and went on to a really amazing career on both coasts.
Right. It seems I've been back and forth a couple of times on the coast, but I graduated with a degree in applied violin and wasn't quite sure what I was going to do with that degree because I recognized early on I probably wasn't going to be able to make a living as a performer. I wasn't that interested in teaching. And so I veered off into a career that became a very 40-some years of doing arts administration work, primarily in marketing, but basically helping performing artists and arts organizations be able to articulate really what their artistry was about, sort of branding, sort of in the field of branding is what they would call it in the commercial world, and just helping artists help themselves to how to market themselves. It's been a really wonderful career, from helping single artists who you may not have ever heard of to, well, my first job in New York was as the marketing director for the Paul Taylor Dance Company, which is internationally renowned, and Orchestra of St. Luke's in New York, and a lot of dance companies for some reason with a music background, but I worked with the Martha Graham Company and the Ailey Company just to help them on projects. So
now you're in California.
Now I'm currently in San Francisco, and working with a couple of my clients back from the East Coast, but also with a up-and-coming contemporary dance company in San Francisco called Push Dance. And I'm also the director of marketing for the Berklee Symphony. So going back to my music roots there.
There you go. We've come full circle.
Right.
And while we're talking about symphonies, Janice, you graduated and moved on to the Atlanta Symphony to start,
I did, with a slight detour through Southern Virginia. I worked for a small regional orchestra there, but spent 15...
Which orchestra was that?
The Roanoke Symphony.
The Roanoke Symphony.
Yes, in a beautiful southwest corner of the state in the Valley of the Blue Ridge Mountains.
I shared a lot of their musicians with an orchestra
That's right. Yeah. So it was a great way to start. It was a regional orchestra. I was a department of one in an organization of six employees. So great place to learn, great place to get my feet wet. Moved on to the Atlanta Symphony. Spent 15 seasons there doing marketing for the orchestra through a lot of great ups and downs, musician strike, divisive music director change, but also some really great innovative times. And then about 4 years ago, I moved up to Philadelphia to work for the Philadelphia Orchestra, where I'm now the vice president of marketing there. And again, having some ups and downs there. The orchestra, about just a few months after I joined, filed for bankruptcy. One of the only major orchestras that not only filed for bankruptcy, but we have since come out and have been in a much more solid position than we ever have been.
Yeah, you're really in a great place now. Mm-hmm. And what a wonderful hall you play in, too.
Oh, my goodness. Verizon Hall was built for the orchestra, just celebrated its 10th anniversary. So it's been a wonderful ride. It really has. It really has.
And Alicia, you graduated and went on to pursue your singing. We share an alma mater.
We do, Peabody Conservatory.
The Peabody.
The Peabody.
So tell us, what did you do?
Well, I was a voice major. Mm-hmm. I dabbled in English composition and poetry, which really helped me later on. That's why I loved DePauw, because I was able to do all these liberal arts classes. And then it really helped because I ended up going on into a lot of 20th century music. So I went from here to Peabody. And then I was a resident artist for just a short time in Orlando and then went right to the Lyric in Chicago. And they found out that I wasn't dumb, which is kind of hard for a singer because then you have to sing all the hard music.
You missed your chance. You could have kept playing dumb.
I could have just sung Mozart forever and just been, I don't get it, you know. But I didn't do that. But it was great because once they find out you can do that, then they hire you all the time for new music. So I ended up doing a lot of 20th century, culminating in singing Daisy in Gatsby at the Lyric. So I got to do the lead there. And that took me to the Met, so I was able to cover Don Upshaw for that. And I've done lots of world premieres, and it's been a lot of fun. So, yeah, sung all over.
Yeah, and it's so fascinating to me at DePauw. You know, this is my third year, and I still feel quite a bit like the kid in the candy store because there's so many great things that happen here. But to sit around a table with the four of you and see how successful your careers have been and how varied, and yet somehow DePauw managed to prepare each of you for this career that you've launched and made on your own. So maybe you can tell me a little bit about your time at DePauw, and the floor will be open. So how did DePauw help prepare you for that?
One way, you had a wonderful secretarial practices course. This is not what you expected to hear from me. No, but it's really true, because when I got out of school, I didn't really have a clear plan. DePauw was preparing me for a career I didn't know I was going to have, because all the different things that I did here, the collegians, the university choir, even the sorority skits, you know, all these things were entertainment.
Right.
And even one summer, four of us went to the Iroquois Amphitheater in Louisville, Kentucky, and auditioned for the shows there and all got into the chorus. But that was because we were at DePauw and we heard about it here. And of course, I mean, the biggest thing of meeting my collaborator here with whom I'm still working, that was another thing. But just as a sideline on that thing about the secretarial thing, I think when I graduated from school and was here, women weren't really planning careers a lot. Some did, of course. But most of us were going to work until we got married, or while our husbands were going to school, or until they made enough money that we could quit. So I did not leave thinking I'm going to write musicals. But the way my life unfolded, and the fact that Gretchen and her husband came to New Haven, Connecticut, where I was with my DePauw husband, and we kept working on musicals while they were in school. That eventually led to the fact that we wound up in New York one day and started pounding the pavements there for that.
This past summer, we got to go up and see Getting My Act Together in its revival. And as I sat and watched that production, I thought what a proud moment that had to be for you and Gretchen, because here is a musical that has influenced so many people for so many generations, and now it's coming back again. And to think that all those years ago, when you were writing something for a little show at DePauw, this friendship and this partnership that you had generated was actually going to influence the thinking of thousands of people because of the work you two did together. So that was a proud night for all of us from DePauw.
Well, it was great to have you there. We felt very nicely supported by all of you.
That was a great evening.
I was just going to say, when I graduated from DePauw with this degree in music, I really wasn't sure what I was going to do. And for a couple of years, I was still studying violin and trying to figure it all out. And how I got into this career of managing artists and working with artists is that I asked myself, so what sort of, what are my skills? I recognized early on that if I were to continue in music, I would always kind of be mediocre. And so I sort of looked at what other skills I had and what other things I could do. And because of my liberal arts training here at DePauw, I had taken creative writing and lots of English courses. And I enjoyed writing, and I enjoyed, creative thinking and trying to put that on paper. And so when I think back on the skills that I have now, it really started with that training at DePauw of being able to articulate on paper and visually what the artistry is. And this is the skill that I use, with all of my clients and with all of my projects. And it's something that a lot of musicians, a lot of artists of any kind, have the most trouble doing. They are brilliant at what they do, but they have a really hard time articulating that to the common man who, doesn't know anything about music or doesn't know anything about dance or theater or whatever. And so what I've been able to do in my career is to sort of be that middle person to help articulate and demonstrate in writing and in visuals what the musician's trying to say, or what makes this piano trio different from any other piano trio, And it's just a very fascinating and rewarding career.
You and I have a common acquaintance. He stage managed a show I was in and worked for you at one point, and I asked him about you, and he had a really interesting point that I thought was really great. He said that your knowledge of the field and your personal experience is obviously what makes you successful, but that you had this great sense of empathy, that you understood what it was to be an artist. You were prepared for that yourself, and so therefore your ability to relate to these people in that way gave those folks a comfort level that they wouldn't have just dealing with a business person.
Right.
So
right.
It was kind of the mix of your experience here at DePauw that Absolutely. Set you up in that way. And I know for all of us as artists, we're always looking for a compatriot and someone who understands us, and that's a whole lot to put on someone, but you seem to shoulder that very well.
I think for me it was a very straight line. I can draw a direct line back to my experience here. In addition to all the performance opportunities with the ensembles and the coursework, the real life opportunities that DePauw gave each of us is really the reason I am where I am today. Mm-hmm. The internships over winter term was one of them I did with the Atlanta Symphony that led mm-hmm. to the position I had at that time. And then I don't know if the New York Arts Program is still mm-hmm. thriving, but that was a turning point for me to spend a semester in New York City working for an orchestra there on Carnegie Hall stage. That absolutely solidified for me that this was, while I was like Noel, I was a trained violinist, I knew I was going to be mediocre at best. but at the time, I could take that passion for the music and turn mm-hmm. it into selling the music and mm-hmm. being able to bring the music to an audience of a large number. So there's a very direct line for me that was the experience that DePauw gave me.
Do you ever feel daunted by the fact that you're with the Philadelphia Orchestra? I mean, you're one of the world's great orchestras.
For the first few moments, stepping on stage and being surrounded by these colleagues and, you know, 112-year history that we feel very, there's a tradition that's a weight on your shoulders that you want to be respectful of the tradition, mm-hmm. but then also bring it forward and mm-hmm. bring it into places and spaces and bring it into the community of Philadelphia as well. Mm-hmm. And not only in Philadelphia, but traveling the world. I have colleagues that are setting up for our China tour. In a few weeks, we're going through China and Asia for 3 weeks and then into Europe next year. So we are really, you know, an ambassador not only for Philadelphia, but for the country.
And you have a very forward-thinking conductor.
Oh, my goodness. To have someone like Yannick Nezet-Seguin at the head of our orchestra at the moment is is wonderful. And as a marketer, he is a marketer's dream. Mm-hmm. Not only is he transformative on the artistic side, but is very conscious of his brand mm-hmm. as a person, as a conductor, but his brand within the ensemble.
Yeah, he's very much a 21st century musician. We're always talking about creating 21st century musicians.
And he embodies it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he embodies it.
And what is interesting as well is that I'm one of the rare marketing vice presidents that can sit at a table like this and have a programming conversation. Mm-hmm. and it's rare it's empathy because it, you know, in previous training, music directors would program whatever it is that was of artistic value and point and story that they wanted to tell, and it was delivered to the marketing staff and off you had to go and sell it. Mm-hmm. Sometimes well, sometimes not so well. Mm-hmm. So to have a conversation with a music director as talented and as artistically visionary as Yannick is, but also wanting to answer the question, well, what will sell mm-hmm. and who will sell and how will mm-hmm. we sell this right. has been unbelievable.
Yeah, and I'm one of those people who is unabashed about saying, absolutely, we're here for the audience. Mm-hmm. You know, this is music that needs to be shared, and we can bring it to the audience in a very dynamic way, and we can find mm-hmm. lifelong listeners. So I'm happy to see that happening in Philly.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, Yannick. I did a cozy with him, oh gosh, 10 years ago. He is a genius. Mm-hmm. He is a genius. And he's this little tiny like packet of like intense heat. He's like a fusion reactor in a human being. He's just amazing.
And is every bit as humble and genuine as you can imagine. There is no ego to that person. Yeah,
he was very much like, what are your ideas about the score? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, and teach me how you do this recit. And then it was so collaborative. And
it's amazing.
You were really lucky.
It's a dream to
and
be working with him.
And he's adorbs. Oh, he's so cute. Oh, I love that man. Okay, DePauw. Oh, my goodness. Where do I start? You know, I was a big part of Do's or Do, the theater organization. Mm-hmm. I did so many straight plays. And that's what I was able to do here that you can't do mm-hmm. in conservatories. Mm-hmm. I was very active in the English department. I wrote lots of poetry with Marnie McGinnis. She was my mentor. And that led to, right now I'm writing a libretto for an opera. Nice. That led directly to that, a new branch in my life. Yes, hello. Yeah. And, you know, I credit her with mentoring me there. But then I took her class in American Women Poets, which then I sought out music written by, you know, either hopefully women composers, but oftentimes male composers, but using those poets mm-hmm. and programmed lots of concerts around that. And that was where I got the knowledge of those powerful voices that often don't get heard because, mm-hmm. you know, American women poets don't always get their due. Mm-hmm. And I put on probably 15 shows. We would put on our own shows. Mm-hmm. You know, I got curtains in my basement. Let's put on a show. And so then later in my career, or in my career, I was known for being an actress. And that, you can trace that directly to here, because I was able to hone that craft in dialogue. I was able to do all these shows with dialogue that most singers are terrified of doing. Because I did lots of straight theater here.
And a very serious musical training to develop the voice that got you these gigs.
Yes, I just remember sitting in the recital hall and hearing Vox Baline by George Crumb and being my mind blown apart, but thinking, this can happen. We can do this. Mm-hmm. Music isn't just Mozart. It's not just Beethoven. It's George Crumb. It's Webern. And the faculty, I mean, talk about the most giving, loving human beings. There was no ego. There was no, you know, division. We were very respectful, and thank goodness they taught us how to be respectful, because that's an important part of
being
music.
Successful as a musician.
And learning that there's a hierarchy and that you have to honor the traditions. But also to be so generous with their time. You know, Randy Solomon and I did, you know, Sylvia Plath's and Ned Roram's I can't remember what it's called now, but things like that. You know, Claude Zimmerman and I collaborated together, and this was as a student. I mean, I was a blessed human being to have gone here.
And we're blessed to have you all back to share this with the current students. You know, it's funny that you mentioned do's or do, because I have sat at this table doing interview after interview with people who have talked about the self-run plays they produced and do's or do. It is so gratifying for all of us to see the impact that DePauw has had on so many of our students, and then on so many because of the work of our alumni. And we're thrilled that you're back to share your graces and your stories with our current students, and we hope you'll come back again soon and often. And thanks for coming to chat about it.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Rounding out this week's episode, from their concert of Sunday, April 13th, 2014, organ soloist Carla Edwards and the DePauw University Band, under the direction of Craig Paré, performed the fourth movement of Symphonie Concertante by Joseph Yongen, arranged for band by DePauw professor James Beckley.
Thank you.
We hope you've enjoyed this week's episode of Music for Life. We love hearing from listeners. You can contact us by emailing musicforlife@depaul.edu. We're also on Facebook at DePaul Music for Life, and you can subscribe to our show on iTunes by searching there for DePaul Music for Life. Our student producers are Anna Gatdula, Matt Skiba, Rachel Clark, Katie Sherman, and Burke Stanton. Our online editor is Veronica Pedrell, and our show is produced by Matthew Champagne in the Judson and Joyce Green Center for the Performing Arts at DePaul University in Greencastle, Indiana. I'm Mark McCoy, Dean of the School of Music. Thanks for listening to our show. Keep music in your life, and have a great week.
Music for Life.